These are African rhythms, passed down to us through ancient spirits. Feel the spirit, a unifying force. Come on, move with the spirit. Stand up, clap your hands. Move with the rhythms, get down.
From WSNC 90.5 FM, a broadcasting service and NPR affiliate of Winston-Salem State University, welcome to Africa World Now Project. I'm your host and producer, James Pope. Today, the afterlives of Mariela Franco, Black women's resistance in Brazil. Africa World Now Project is next. Data shows that 1 in 5 of Rio de Janeiro's inhabitants reside in one of its more than 1,000 favelas. It is in these spaces where inequality and human potential is molded, identity is created, resistance is formulated. While favelas are the environment that create the extraordinary and excludes the ordinary, they also lack infrastructure such as transportation, health services, and schools, which are often blamed on its residents. As a result, favelas are seen mostly by elites as areas of poverty, social chaos, and crime. Folk who live in these communities are criminalized before birth. After the abolition of slavery in 1888, favelas begin to rapidly appear, as the once enslaved Afro-descended population found themselves without access to livable employment and places to live. Majority moved to urban areas to take part in and create informal economies, primarily due to official policies between former plantation owners and government officials who prioritized immigration of European migrants. The Brazilian ruling class and the planters of the Southeast were very explicit on who would hold power by formulating strict policies that regulated the composition of the rural working class after the abolition of slave labor. The question of race was fundamental to any definition of management-worker relationship. It is within this abbreviated history that we locate Mariela Franco, a Black queer woman, mother, sociologist, socialist, human rights defender, and councilwoman from the favela of Maré, who was assassinated March 14, 2018. Mariela was born and raised in one of Rio's favelas and was murdered representing her and other communities like it. She fearlessly exposed the implications of overt brutal policies of austerity, violent policing, and military occupation, making links to the militarization of the Brazilian police forces and the occupation of the majority Black, majority poor favelas of her city, Rio de Janeiro. She was an active member of the Party for Socialism and Liberty and consistently challenged the status quo of negligence and abuse waged by so many political parties of Afro-Brazilians and poor communities. It should be of no surprise that just days before her assassination, she was tapped to be the rapporteur of the committee to review the recent federal intervention in the military occupation of the favelas in Rio de Janeiro. Of the many continuities that we can identify with the assassination of Mariela Franco and the efforts she fought to expose, extrapolating them to the conditions and experiences around the African world, we must not forget that Mariela Franco was a part of a long tradition of freedom fighters. Black women who contributed tirelessly to combating institutional and extrajudicial injustices. Sabina, the mother of Zumbi. Princess Akotun, Araminta Minty Ross, aka Harriet Tubman. Queen Nanny, Queen Mother Moore, Ya Asantewaa, Claudia Jones. In the statement on the imperative of transnational solidarity, a U.S. Black feminist statement on the assassination of Mariela Franco, professors Kia Caldwell, Wendy Muse, Tiana Pichel, Erica Williams, Kristen Smith, and our very own Keisha Khan Perry writes that we are aware of the transnational significance of Mariela's murder and its links to global practices of anti-Black genocide. Brazil's Black population is the second largest African-descended population in the world, and it has been the target of brutal and violent policing practices for decades. In fact, Brazil's crisis of police violence cannot be separated from the global context of anti-Black deadly policing or other forms of violence. Professors Wilms, Caldwell, Smith, Perry, Muse, and Pichel go on to highlight that it is important to recognize that Black Brazilians have also been speaking out and organizing against anti-police lethality and brutality for generations. Black resistance can be traced back as far as the wars between slavery-era Calimbos, Maroon communities, and Portuguese military forces. This is important to remember if we consider that contemporary police apparatuses emerged throughout the Americas first as direct response to the threat of black revolt against slavery. As such, black people have resisted violent, racialized policing since the institutionalization and aggressive proliferation of slavery throughout the entire region. Today, in the tradition of holding up those who contribute to freedom in recognition of the afterlives of Mariela Franco, we explore Afro and indigenous women's radical resistance in Brazil with Johanna Wapichana of the REDE Party and Congresswoman for the state of Roraima in the Amazon region and first indigenous woman ever elected to the Brazilian Congress, and Sarah Alves Branco, a black Brazilian human rights lawyer advocating for the promotion of racial and gender equality, as well as legal advisor and project assistant at the Black Brazilian Organization Center of Studies of Labor Relations and Inequalities, CEERT. Our show is produced today in solidarity with the Native, Indigenous, African, and Afro-descendant communities at Standing Rock, Venezuela, Corbis and Jackson in Jackson, Mississippi, Brazil, the Avalon Village in Detroit, Colombia, Kenya, Palestine, South Africa, and Ghana, and other places who are fighting for the protection of our land for the benefit of all peoples. Enjoy the program.
Good evening, everyone. And thank you, Crystal, for having us here. I think this is very important, especially the issues that we are facing today, not only in Brazil, but I think in Latin America and the U.S. and some countries in Europe and all of that. So I'm very honored to be here and honored also to share the panel with Joenia. So I think before I start talking about the issues that we are facing now concerning black people's issue, I thought it was important to bring a little bit of which country we are talking about, like what is Brazil when it comes to race. So Brazil is held slavery for 288 years, which is the country that held slavery for the longest in the Americas. Also, so out of 5,200 years of history, we have more than half of it of slavery. So we can say that it was a country founded based on black people's labor. It also was the country that most brought enslaved Africans to the Americas. So during this period of time, they brought 4 million of enslaved Africans. And then, so after, okay, so we have a country that the majority of the population is black. So after the abolition, there was this issue, okay, we have too many black people here. We need to make this country white, because there was the idea of a white country will succeed, you know, that Eurocentric and white supremacist idea. So at the time, the government created some whitening policies, which was the stimulation of European immigration. So at the time, like, black immigration was prohibited in Brazil. Only Europeans could come. So in the idea to whitening the country, and so they would offer labor, land, and it was like literally a public policy international campaign towards that. And also at the same time, it was created a racial democracy. And the reason why I wrote The Myth of Racial Democracy is that now after decades that the black movement in Brazil fought to prove that, no, there's not just social issues in Brazil, there's also a racial inequality in the country. So there's no racial democracy. And the idea of this terminology was basically, oh, there's no racism here, everybody gets along, we're very mixed, you know, so because of like this whitening, so the population ends up like mixing, you know, so like how come, like if you're all mixed, how there's racism here, you know? So based on that, the governments throughout the years created only policies targeting poverty, class issues. So there was the understanding that if we target class issue, black people will also like move up in the social pyramid, you know. And as the years go by, we see that that's not true. So even though we can have public policies targeting poverty, but then when we see the data, we see that poor white people move up and black people are still left behind, because we are talking about racial institutional racism and all of that. So officially today, 56 percent of the population self-identifies as black. And the reason why I put pardos and black is that there is this understanding that black pardos are the people who are mixed. So they are also in the group of the black population. So they are the majority of the population, in fact. So based on that, on those ideas of marginalization that start since day one of abolition and all of that, we have historical human rights violations that has been happening to us. So because of that, 70% of the population that lives in extreme poverty is black. Domestic violence against black women increases 60%, while against white women, it increases 1.7%. So we see like racial, institutional racism there, because it was like in the same period of time. Also, and the black people represent 55%, almost 55% of the labor force in the country, but only less than 5% of the of this group occupy high positions in companies. We have, as an heritage of slavery, we have the one of the biggest domestic workers population in the world, which is a majority black women. So even until today, we are the ones working in the households, I would say. And because of that also, only in 2015 that the Congress approved the law that would give those domestic workers labor rights. You know, so there was like a huge movement for that. You know, they organized it politically, and also the understanding of like, okay, that's the reason why that happened only in 2015 is because of racism. You know, so there is a, it said that, no, that's your place. That has always been your place, you know. So yeah, and then when it comes to state violence, which is also, of course, is included in human rights violations, but the reason why I decided to put separate is because, I don't know if everybody's aware of that, but Brazil is one of the most violent countries in the world. And that's because of racism as well. The black movement today says that there is a genocide against black people, especially black youth, happening in Brazil. So the data says that every 23 minutes, a black young man is assassinated. Also, it's the second country with the highest incarcerated population. So 60% of the population that who is incarcerated is black, and only 40%, no, and I'm sorry, not only, but 40% of the population doesn't have a sentence yet. So like they are waiting for trial, and that can take years to happen. So they are like, their freedom right is taken away, and people don't even know if they committed the crime or not. You know what I mean? I thought it was important, especially when we talk about Bolsonaro and the dictatorship and all of that, to understand that even though, so the dictatorship ended in the 80s in Brazil, but the strategies that the police used to oppress people, they kept those practices against the poor and black people in the communities in the favelas. So there's still torture, there is still like kidnapping and disappearances. So there are like 2015, there was this campaign, Where is Amarildo? And Amarildo was this black man in Rio, in the favela, that he disappeared, you know. And people saw the police, which was the military at the time, you know, taking him somewhere, you know, and nobody knows until today where is his body at, you know. And also extrajudicial execution. So there are cases in which the person, especially like young black men, goes buy bread or whatever and get killed by the police. So that happens like all the time, every day. During in 2008, which was under Lula's administration, Rio government created the UPP, which is the Pacifier Police Unity, and the idea was to bring the army to the favelas in order to bring peace and end violence and face drugs, cartels, and all of that. And it was the same military that they sent, there was also our government, to Haiti. You know, so under Lula's administration, Brazil was like had its UN mission peace sent, peace mission, I'm sorry, sent to Haiti. And the same atrocities that happened there with the human rights violations that the Haitians faced. In the favelas in Rio de Janeiro, the same thing happened. So they came, the state comes with this idea of, okay, let's bring peace, let's face next target violence and drug trafficking and all of that. But in that, you know, we know that there is a, it's a project, it's a nation project of like exterminating black people, you know? So the strategy that they use there is the assassinations and how the police, you know, work. So after giving all this context and data and all of that, I think it's important to share the social advances that we had throughout the years, of course, and also to understand what does it mean to have like Bolsonaro in the government. So I first started with the 1978, the first political movement organized like as black people was the Unified Movement Against Racial Democracy, MNU. They exist into today. And at the time, it was during dictatorship, so the civil society wasn't allowed to organize and protest and do all of that, you know. So at that period of time, the MNU was created. And it was in a context that four young boys, black men, they wanted to access this sport club, and they said, no, you can't come in here because you're black. So that's how it started. So you have the MNU that starts the political fight in 78, and only in 1995, finally, we have the first president that acknowledged that, okay, there is racism in Brazil. We have a racial problem. We need to address that. So after that, they start creating some social programs, you know, but no, there wasn't any program like targeting like race, but mostly class, you know, so there was still an issue like this, like it's uncomfortable to talk about race in Brazil. That's how I see it. So, and then when we have Lula's administration in power, that's when things start getting better because it's a left government. So it's like more open to the dialogue with the society. There was international pressure as well. We had like the Durban Conference in 2001 in South Africa. That was very important to the black movement in the entire diaspora. So after that, the reparations movement, you know, like, okay, you have to do something, you know, there's no way around this. So that's when we have affirmative actions. You know, so in 2010, the Supreme Court, okay, guys, that's not discrimination. We need to do it. It's legal and all that. So 2010, we have the affirmative actions. And in 10 years, the numbers of young, of black people in university tripled. And also in 2003, the Congress approved this law that obligates these schools, private and public schools, to teach African history and Afro-Brazilian history in school, which was like something that the black movement also were fighting for, because the thing with racism is also like not knowing about our history, you know. And also more social programs like FIES, Ciências Sem Fronteiras, and ProUni, which was like more targeting poor people, you know, like low-income families. And we also got the Black Conscience Day, which is the day that celebrates Zumbi dos Palmares' death. So he was one of the main leaders that fought against slavery in Brazil. And then another thing that was very important in the history of like black movement and social advance was the Black Women's March in 2015. So black women movement became like huge, you know, and then we started like, okay, you guys need to pay attention to us, you know, because we also have a gender issue when discussing race, you know, so we always like put you to the side. So then we got to bring 50,000 black women marching in Brasilia in 2015, demanding visibility, education, health, all the like basic rights, pretty much. And then at the same time that we have all these social advances, we have a group of people in Brazil, conservatives, the elites, that it was bothering them, you know. So seeing black people, for example, where they're not supposed to be at, you know, because no, you're not supposed to come to the same university that my kid go to, you know. No, my maid, she's not going to the airport, to Miami, in the same airplane that I am going to, you know, that's not your place. So those social advances that we had in the country also brought a lot of feelings, I would say, in the elites, you know. And then we have the Dilma's Cup, and then Temer takes office. And then we have Trump's election here, which for Bolsonaro was very good, you know, that they have a, I think we know by now, right? They have like a connection, and they're very alike in some ways. So that gave, and also the evangelical church in the community, they played an important role as well for Bolsonaro's election, you know. So the main thing that Bolsonaro, the main thing of his campaign was like targeting violence as well. So like Brazil, okay, we are so, there's so many violence here. We need to face that. How do we do? We need to fight violence and all of that. So, and then we know what happens when we discuss violence the way that they want to discuss is that black people are the targets, like all the time. So it was, his main campaign was the anti-crime package. And the anti-crime package pretty much would give the police officer the opportunity to kill and claim, oh, I was so scared that I shot him, you know. So, and then it isn't a crime anymore. It would be legal to kill just because I was scared, you know. Also, another thing is that the plea bargain, which is something that he imported from the United States, actually. So you confess a crime that you didn't commit. You make an agreement with the prosecutor. So most of the time, you don't even have a lawyer. You don't know your rights. So those kids go to jail, you know. So that would impact also in the increase of the incarcerated population. Also, another thing that I thought was important is Bolsonaro's family connection with the murders of Marielle Franco. So one of the guys that was very, the suspect of the murder, for example, lives in the same complex building as Bolsonaro. You know, so like the investigation is getting closer and closer to them. So it's pretty crazy to see that you have like a president that is connected to the militias and that killed, we don't know that if he killed or not, but he might know who killed her, and he's president, you know. And that has to do a lot with white privilege as well. We had last year Agatha's assassination, which was like during a police operation in Rio de Janeiro. She was riding the bus. She was like 5-6 years old, riding the bus with her mom, and then she got shot. And the police, okay, we didn't mean to do it, you know, like that's those things. But they just go inside the favela and they shoot, you know. And then Agatha's death was something. And then we just see that if we say that every 23 minutes a young black man's assassinated. In like during governments that were like more to the left and social concerns and all of that. So when we are like with a government that is like far right, we see like children get assassinated, you know. Also, there was this case of this family. It was a black family going to a baby shower. And then the army in Rio de Janeiro as well, they shot 8 times the car. And the dad and David dead. And then Bolsonaro said that it was a mistake, you know. So how you shoot 80 times, and then you say, "Oh, that was a mistake," and that was it. Nothing happened. The officers weren't brought to court. Like nothing happened. It's okay, you know. It's the black person. So another thing that Bolsonaro is doing is the Alcântara Agreement. So in Brazil, we have the quilombolas communities, the Maroons. So those are people that they descend from slavery as well, but they have like their lands, because those are the people that actually, when they ran away from slavery, they like created communities, you know, where they would hide and all of that. So they are still in the same land even today, resisting, of course. And then with Alcântara specifically, it's in Maranhão, the state of Maranhão. And the idea is an agreement between Bolsonaro and Trump in which Trump can use the airspace of that area to launch aircrafts and things like that. So like it's a very strategic place when thinking about wars and things like that. And of course, there are some steps that you need to take before signing agreements like that, you know. For example, you need to consult the local population. You know, if you replace them, you need to give reparations, for example, you know, because the economy, all of that depends on that land as well. And of course, they signed the agreement, they take to Brazilian Congress, and the agreement was approved, actually, you know. So probably, like, we have now in Alcântara 2,000 quilombolas that will be displaced. We don't know where, how that will happen, but that's what we have. And also, another thing that Bolsonaro is proposing is to change how they collect data survey, you know? So it's through data that we think about public policy, for example. So if I don't collect data on race, for example, how do I know who is who, where we are in the society, in the social parameter of that? I can't create effective public policies if I don't have proper data. And then when he does that, he can like hide, for example, you know, important information. So for us, there we are like, we have like, of course, we are the targets, and I don't know if it's target or like the focus of public policy implementation. So that can directly affect us drastically. Also, right when he took office, there was discussion of like, oh, we don't need affirmative actions and all of that. You know, there's no racism in Brazil, because he came back with this narrative, you know. So like what we took decades to prove, like, oh no, it's a myth, there's no racial democracy. He's back with that speech of, oh, there's no racism here. You know, we have poverty, we have whatever, but there's no problem with racism, you know. And even though he's racist himself, but anyways. And also recently, I think like 2 weeks ago, our economy minister, they were like discussing about the dollar, because the dollar for us is very expensive now. And then he said, oh, but it's good that the dollar is high, because we see like domestic workers wanting to go to Miami and all of that. No, you need to travel in Cyprus. You need to stay here. Like it was like a party. They were going to Miami 3 times a year, like, you know, like a domestic worker, really. So that's how we see the mentality of like that elite mentality, you know, those things that just shows us how they get bothered when we start like moving out of our places. So as strategies of resistance, not only to Bolsonaro, of course, but to the killing and all of that, besides the unified black movement that I mentioned that started in 1978, the black movement in Brazil kept growing, you know. So nowadays we have like a lot of black organizations. You have like collectives in universities and neighborhoods and all of that. And CERT specifically, which is the organization I'm representing today, one thing that is, we went to court to have, and then we got the sentence that the Brazilian court saying the only case of assassination that the judge saw as racism, you know? So it was the first case. He was a journalist student who was walking down the street after he left his girlfriend's house. The police goes passed by him, and the victim was in the car saying that someone stole his backpack and all of that. And then he says, no, I didn't. Yes, you did, blah, blah. And then he's shot and dead. So then his family went to court, of course, and then that was the only case. This is the only case that we have that the court said, okay, that's because he was black. After that, we filed 4 petitions in the UN Nations, the United Nations, I'm sorry, denouncing the genocide against young black people. That was in 2017. And then after that, and with a rise of Bolsonaro, the black movement itself, like more than 60 black organizations in the entire country, united, you know, to create the Brazilian Black Coalition for Rights. So at the time, the emergency that we were facing, like, okay, we need to stop this, we need to do something to end this, was the Alcantara Agreement and also the anti-crime packages. So that was like the main focus that the Black Coalition had at the time. But also, of course, we understand that we are not, we started as reacting to the government, but also we need to act, you know, so create things, create strategies, right? So we have been doing national advocacy in Brazil, international advocacy. So we are here in DC for the Congressional Black Caucus, discussing with like some Congress people like how they could intervene in Brazil, especially with Alcantara Agreement, for example, is something that they could do. Yeah, and besides that, I think there is this the intentions not only to share and have us talking about ourselves to what's happening to us in Brazil, but also we understand that international is also understanding like, okay, what's happening in the rest of Latin America, Caribbean, and the United States. So how can we support each other? How can we exchange strategies of resistance across the borders, you know? So that's the main idea of when we decide, okay, we need to do this internationally, because it's not amazing, but when I'm abroad and I'm talking to someone like, oh no, Brazil is black pretty much. Like, oh really? I didn't know there was black people in Brazil. So that tells a lot about like who is traveling out of the country, you know, and what they're talking about us. They're not talking about us, you know. So for us, it's important to have our own narrative. You know, we will talk about ourselves. Yeah, thank you.
You are currently listening to The Afterlives of Mariela Franco, an exploration of Afro and indigenous women's radical resistance in Brazil with Johanna Wapichana of the REDE Party and Congresswoman for the state of Roraima in the Amazon region and first indigenous woman ever elected to the Brazilian Congress, and Sarah Alvarez Branco, a black Brazilian human rights lawyer advocating for the promotion of racial and gender equality, as well as legal advisor and project assistant at the Black Brazilian Organization Center of Studies of Labor Relations and Inequalities, CEERT. Our show is produced today in solidarity with the Native, Indigenous, African, and Afro-descendant communities at Standing Rock, Venezuela, Cooperation Jackson in Jackson, Mississippi, Brazil, the Avalon Village in Detroit, Colombia, Kenya, Palestine, South Africa, and Ghana, and other places who are fighting for the protection of our land for the benefit of all peoples. Continue to enjoy the program.
Boa noite. Eu vou falar em português, mas quem aqui fala português? Olha, a maioria. Caimen, Pucudã? Quem fala Wapichana? Ninguém, né? Caimen. Uma vez eu fiz essa brincadeira com um parlamentar, que ele falava assim, eu gostaria de mudar esse nome da língua oficial brasileira para a língua portuguesa, porque a língua portuguesa é a língua brasileira. Aí eu dizia para ele, a língua brasileira são as línguas indígenas. Essas são as verdadeiras línguas indígenas. Então, é só uma coisa para descontrariar, porque muitas vezes, fora do Brasil, a gente imagina que não tem línguas originárias do Brasil e tem mais de 274 línguas indígenas.
I'm going to speak in Portuguese. And good evening. Now you have to say it in Wapichana.
I just say Kaimen.
Kaimen.
Like, how are you?
And who here speaks Portuguese? Who here speaks Wapichana? So I brought this as a provocation because once a congressman in Brazil said they should change the name of the language spoken in Brazil, in Brazil, from Portuguese to Brazilian, because he was saying what we really speak here is Brazilian Portuguese. So that should become the official language. And I said, well, actually, if we want to talk about which language is Brazilian, we should talk about all of the indigenous Brazilian languages. A lot of people don't know that indigenous Brazilian languages exist, but there are actually 274 different indigenous languages that are native to our country.
Esta é uma diversidade cultural rica que deveríamos valorizar. Nós temos 305 diferentes povos com diferentes culturas. A maioria, digamos assim, está localizada na Amazônia brasileira, mas nem todos sabem dessa diversidade cultural que o Brasil tem.
So we have a very rich cultural diversity, and this should be valued. Brazil has 305 different indigenous peoples, each with their very specific culture. But a lot of people don't know about that. Most of them are in the Amazon.
Nós somos quase 1 milhão hoje. O censo foi realizado em 2010, apontava que era 800 e poucos mil, mas não contabilizaram corretamente. Mas a gente tem dados pela Fundação Nacional do Índio que beira 1 milhão.
The indigenous population, we are about 1 million people. The 2010 census estimated around 800,000 people, but we were not adequately counted. The Foundation for Indigenous Studies, the FUNAI, the state agency for indigenous people, has data that points towards that number of 1 million people.
Muito tempo atrás, na época de colonização, há 520 anos atrás, os historiadores apontavam que a população chegou a 5 milhões.
But a long time ago, 520 years ago, in fact, in the time of colonization, studies point to the fact that there were about 5 million indigenous people in Brazil.
Tem uma diferença muito grande. O que aconteceu, então, com esses 4 milhões?
This is a huge difference. What happened to these 4 million people?
O processo de colonização, o genocídio, a tortura, a perseguição, a escravidão.
The process of colonization, genocide, torture, persecution, and slavery.
São tristes histórias que querem ser mudadas nesse governo Bolsonaro. São fatos reais que querem serem escondidos, mas o processo não terminou. O processo de colonização ainda está em andamento. Quando não se reconhece os direitos indígenas, que já são assegurados em lei, quando não se demarca a terra indígena, quando coloca o indígena numa situação, digamos, inferior.
These are sad stories, and they are true facts, which the Bolsonaro government wants to hide and tell in a different way. But the fact is that the process of colonization still goes on in Brazil. When people are not recognized in their rights, when indigenous territories are not recognized, and when individuals are indigenous individuals are considered inferior.
A nossa Constituição Federal brasileira, ela assegura o direito a uma organização social. Isso significa reconhece a cultura indígena, o próprio modo do indígena viver. Ela obriga a União, no caso o Estado brasileiro, a demarcar e proteger as terras indígenas. Ela reconhece que existe uma diferença que tem que ser assegurada em termos de políticas públicas específicas.
Our Constitution grants indigenous people a list of rights, the rights to culture, the rights to their way of life. The state has to recognize indigenous lands and protect these lands, and also establish public policies that are specific for the indigenous peoples, public policies, for example, for education and health.
No momento, todos esses direitos que eu acabei de falar estão em risco. Risco porque o presidente Bolsonaro se elegeu fazendo discurso que não haveria vez para o indígena no seu mandato.
At the moment, we are living through a situation in which all of these aforementioned rights are threatened. President Bolsonaro was elected during a campaign in which, in his speeches, he clearly stated that these rights would not be respected.
E falou que não iria demarcar nem um centímetro de terra. Aliás, ele corrigiu. Nenhum milímetro mais de terra indígena seria demarcada.
In one of his speeches, he stated that he wouldn't recognize not even one more centimeter of indigenous lands. And then he corrected himself and said, not even one millimeter.
E avançou mais. Defendeu que para economia do Brasil crescer, o dito desenvolvimento econômico iria abrir as terras indígenas para a exploração dos minérios, mineração, garimpo e hidrelétricas.
And he went on to defend that for the sake of the growth of our economy, or his understanding of economic development, we should open indigenous lands for the exploitation of mineral resources, for individual wildcat miners, and for hydroelectric power plants.
Hoje, não são apenas ameaças, são fatos concretos. Existem proposições do governo em trâmite no Congresso Nacional que tentam passar isso para que seja concretizado.
Today, these are not just threats. They are concrete facts. There are bills that have been proposed by this administration that are now being examined in our Congress that try to legalize these proposals.
Eu estou aqui essa semana nos Estados Unidos com mais três deputadas federais que são na mesma linha da oposição ao governo Bolsonaro. E uma das principais mensagens que estamos deixando aqui nos Estados Unidos para os americanos e até mesmo para os brasileiros que vivem aqui, para alertar que os impactos do governo Bolsonaro, do governo que aí está, tem sido além dos povos indígenas, das pessoas que vivem na Amazônia, porque os danos que tem causado vai contra a nossa democracia, o nosso meio ambiente, que contribui com a qualidade ambiental para todo o planeta, com a diversidade cultural, com respeito aos direitos humanos e até um crime contra a própria humanidade.
We are here this week together with two other Brazilian congresswomen who are also in a position of opposition to President Bolsonaro. And our message here for the U.S. people and also for Brazilians residing here is to alert that the impact of Bolsonaro goes way beyond just an impact on indigenous people. He is damaging democracy. He is damaging the environment. He is threatening cultural diversity. And our environment is important for the whole planet. So this is actually a crime against humanity.
Como que ele tem feito isso? Flexibilizando principalmente as regras, as leis de proteção aos povos indígenas, quando não se demarca a terra indígena, quando se tenta colocar cada vez mais contingenciamento aos órgãos públicos que têm o dever de proteger tanto os direitos indígenas como a questão ambiental, quando não faz nada contra invasões de terras indígenas, contra o desmatamento que avança na Amazônia, desmatamento e queimada, quando ofende as mulheres, viola as mulheres por questões de gênero, quando persegue tanto o movimento indígena como o movimento afrodescendente no Brasil, quando age para aumentar o ódio contra as diferenças culturais, povos indígenas, quilombolas, que estão em sua linha de perseguição, e até mesmo quando contribui para o clima de racismo, xenofobia, e até mesmo contribuindo assim com essas violências e contra a justiça, gerando assim um clima de impunidade.
How is he doing this? Well, he is weakening our environmental protection laws and flexibilizing all our state mechanisms for protecting the environment. When he doesn't recognize indigenous land or promotes budget cuts in our state agencies whose mandate it is to protect our environment and our rights. When there is governmental inaction facing invasions of our protected areas, deforestations, and fires, when he symbolically violates women, when he persecutes indigenous and Afro-Brazilian leaders, when he stimulates hatred against indigenous populations and the maroon populations, when he increases a climate of racism and xenophobia.
Somente do governo Bolsonaro até aqui, mais de 88% aumentou o desmatamento na Amazônia. Aquela queimada que foi vista no meio de comunicação, que levou uma fumaça, digamos assim, para o estado de São Paulo, que as pessoas não acreditaram que era resultado da queimada da Amazônia, até mesmo chegaram a questionar que era alguma coisa que as ONGs tinham feito. Isso tudo relacionado aos efeitos do desmatamento e queimada. Somente do governo Bolsonaro para cá, mais de 340 novas autorizações para uso de agrotóxico intensivo. E cabe dizer que esses agrotóxicos foram banidos em alguns países, inclusive Estados Unidos, Europa, estão sendo novamente utilizados nas plantações de produtos que são comercializados para fora do país.
Since Bolsonaro took office, there was an increase in 88% in deforestation and fires. The forest fires in the Amazon, which were amply covered in the media, were so strong that they made soot reach all the way to São Paulo, which, if you don't know, is a long way away from the Amazon. The government said they didn't believe this was an effect of the forest fires and doubted the forest fires themselves, and then said that the forest fires had been provoked by non-profit organizations. put the blame on the nonprofits. Also, since Bolsonaro took office, 340 pesticides were allowed to be used, pesticides that had been previously banned, and most of which are banned in the European Union or in the USA, were authorized, and they are now being used in our agriculture with products that are also exported outside of Brazil.
O presidente não tem tido comportamento como presidente, uma pessoa pública, que deveria estar respeitando a Constituição. Talvez vocês já conheçam esse tipo de atitude morando aqui nos Estados Unidos, quando se comunica através de Twitter para ofender grupos que defendem os direitos humanos e não acredita em mudanças climáticas, que não respeita as mulheres. Então, da mesma forma, tem se comportado. E principalmente contra os povos indígenas. Mais recente, inclusive, tem falado que indígena não é ser humano, que ainda está em evolução, ainda para se tornar ser humano. Questiona pessoas que trabalham de doméstica que não poderiam vir para Disney. Isso... E faz uma comparação que o trabalhador teria que ficar trabalhando em casa e não tendo férias. Eu poderia citar inúmeros fatos, mas assim, o mais grave, mais recente agora, foi ele utilizar o seu próprio celular presidencial para convocar quem acompanha para atacar, fazer manifestações contra o Congresso Nacional e contra a Suprema Corte Brasileira.
We have a president who doesn't behave like a president. This might be familiar to you. He takes to Twitter to attack activists. He's a climate denier. He takes to Twitter to attack women. That's how he believes. And he especially attacks indigenous peoples. He has said indigenous peoples aren't human yet, that they have evolution ahead of them so they can become humans. He questions, this administration questions, the rights of domestic workers in traveling and have mocked domestic workers coming to Disney. They think workers should never stop working or never have holidays. And just recently, Bolsonaro took to his personal cell phone and invited the Brazilian populace to take to the streets and attack the National Congress and the Supreme Court.
São fatos que são rotinários para nós, mas as pessoas que assistem ainda não estão diretamente, digamos assim, consciente do grave momento que o Brasil vive. Eu diria momentos sombrios, onde está havendo um ataque à democracia do país, uma democracia que foi construída com várias vidas, vários escravos, várias pessoas, genocídio dos povos indígenas, vários latifúndios, uma série de processos que deu a possibilidade, no sentido de terem conquistado um espaço que se respeitasse as diferenças culturais, respeitasse os direitos sociais, e que hoje se encontra ameaçado porque não tem um decoro, que não tem uma capacidade de conduzir o país respeitando a Constituição.
These are routine facts for us, but unfortunately, a part of the population lacks in consciousness that this is a somber moment for the history of Brazil, where a democracy is being attacked. A democracy that was won through a lot of blood, with genocide, with slavery, with land grabbers taking away large tracts of land, huge tracts of land, There was so much work so that we could have victories and conquest, cultural rights, human rights. And this is all being taken away by somebody who doesn't behave or have the capacity to behave like a president.
Para um exemplo final do que anda acontecendo no Brasil, do seu exercício antidemocrático, antiambiental, anti-indígena, anti-direitos humanos, foi a última proposta que foi encaminhada para o Congresso Nacional para abrir as terras indígenas para mineração. Esse projeto viola a Convenção 69 da OIT, que nos garante o direito de consulta prévia, livre, informada. Tenta transformar as terras indígenas numa verdadeira atividade garimpeira. Parece-me que é o sonho do presidente. E tem um artigo numa das revistas que fala que ele, quando era mais novo, costumava pegar bateia e ir para o rio, um lago, em Igarapé, procurar ouro. Então, talvez seja o sonho dele levar o garimpo para as terras indígenas. Mas isso é totalmente ilegal, inconstitucional. Essa proposta que ele está colocando é um dos motivos para eu estar aqui chamando, porque, apesar de não ter aprovada essa lei, só o fato do presidente apoiar está levando muitas pessoas a invadir as terras indígenas em busca de ouro, em busca de diamante. Inclusive, estão se submetendo a serem presas, a caírem de avião, porque está tendo muito acidente. Mas o fato é que há um estímulo para uma prática ilícita, e principalmente na Amazônia brasileira. Os Yanomamis, que estão sendo... Ai, desculpa. Esqueci, sorry.
This is a policy and a government that is anti-democratic, anti-environment, anti-indigenous, and anti-human rights. One of his most recent initiatives was to propose a bill that would allow indigenous lands to be exploited by wildcat miners. This goes radically against Convention 169 of the World Labor Organization and also the Constitution, because in the OIT, WLO convention number 169, there should be informed consent of the population being affected. None of this is being respected. He is trying to transform indigenous areas into unlimited mining operations with individual miners going there. Apparently, this was his dream as a president. A recent article in the media said that when he was younger, he would go to the river to try to find gold. Apparently, he wants to transform the whole Amazon into a huge mining area. This is also unconstitutional. The bill hasn't been approved, but just the fact that the president would submit and approve of an unconstitutional bill is very, very problematic. It actually has stimulated invasions by wildcat miners to the Amazonian region and to indigenous regions. It stimulated people going there. They've actually been suffering plane crashes. So he has stimulated illegality.
Brasil sequer conseguiu resolver os problemas que já teve de desastre das grandes mineradoras, como aconteceu em Mariana, em Brumadinho, e está novamente criando possibilidades de ter novos desastres. Agora, em relação aos povos mais vulneráveis, que são os povos indígenas. Por exemplo, no meu estado, já consta denúncia da organização Yanomami que já tem 20 mil indivíduos, garimpeiros, que nós chamamos, dentro das terras Yanomamis. E segundo estudos, já apontam que há contaminação no sangue através de mercúrio dos Yanomamis. Agora, vocês podem imaginar o que os Yanomamis estão fadados. Os Yanomamis foram os povos indígenas mais recém-contactados. Até um ano atrás, acho que na década de 70, foram os primeiros casos de contato. E agora estão fadados ao genocídio pela contaminação de mercúrio, que são deixados pelas atividades garimpeiras, que são ilegais.
The government hasn't even been able to meet the demands after the major disasters that happened with large mining corporations in the state of Minas Gerais. How can they deal with and protect areas where they are the most vulnerable of the peoples? In Roraima, my state, the Yanomami people, their territory has been invaded by 20,000 individual miners. And studies have found that the mercury runoff from these mining activities has made its way into the blood of the indigenous population. This is a population that was contacted in the 70s, but now they are threatened with genocide due to this contamination.
Por fim, eu quero agradecer à Universidade de Howard, por ter possibilitado essa pequena conversação e encorajar, incentivar que tenha discursos relacionados a essa temática. Povos indígenas, Amazônia, situação política no Brasil. Isso nos ajuda a divulgar, a informar e, acima de tudo, fazer com que a academia possa refletir o que está acontecendo no mundo. Muito obrigada. E, se tiver alguma pergunta, estou aqui. Obrigada.
Finally, I'd like to thank Howard for hosting us, for hosting this dialogue. And I'd like to encourage you to continue with discussions on the indigenous peoples, on the Amazon, on rights in Brazil. Please raise our voices. It's so important that academia reflect on these issues. Thank you very much.
That's it for Africa World Now Project for this week. I would like to thank you for joining us today and look forward to spending time with you next week. We can be reached through all your regular social media platforms. Email africaworldnowproject@gmail.com or follow us on Twitter at AFWRLDNWPRJ. I'm your host and producer, James Pope. The Africa World Now Project Collective consists of international media journalist, executive producer, and human rights activist, Moise Mutali, Africa World Now Project media correspondent, Funda Ngunda, senior research, content contributor, and production director, Dr. Tasneem Siddiqui, senior researcher and content contributor and production associate, Dr. Josh Myers, associate producer and content contributor, Dr. Keisha Khan Perry, technology advisor is Byron Gray of GrayWorks Technology, and creative director is Judah Pope. Africa World Now Project is heard every Wednesday at 7 p.m. on WSNC NPR affiliate and broadcasting service of Winston-Salem State University. Shows are archived weekly on SoundCloud. Search Africa World Now Project. Until next week, be safe, be peaceful, and above all, be intelligent.